So it's late February 2026, and if you've been scrolling through your feeds lately, you'd honestly be forgiven for thinking the only thing happening in tech right now is software.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, it's all about the latest LLM or that the new synthetic agent that orders your groceries or the app that writes your emails. We are just drowning in software right now.
It's the classic shiny object problem, you know? Everyone is so busy looking at the magic trick that nobody bothers to look at the stage it's being performed on.
Right, exactly. But while everyone was distracted watching these AI models fight for dominance, the ground actually kind of shifted under our feet.
Dramatically so.
Yeah, because the Tech and Garage 2026 Hardware Intelligence Report just dropped.
Yeah.
And I have to be honest, usually when you send me a hardware report, I'm expecting, I don't know, a lot of dry charts about clock speeds and thermal paste.
Which can be a bit of a slog to get through.
It can, but this one actually reads differently,
It reads like a blueprint for an entirely new species of computer.
which is a massive claim to make.
It is a big claim, but the data completely backs it up. The central thesis of this report is that we're basically done with the era of the computer as just a calculator.
Right.
We've crossed this threshold where hardware isn't just a tool to run Excel or shoot zombies anymore. It has literally become a physical host for artificial
A
intelligence.
physical host. So
Yeah.
you're saying the silicon isn't just processing basic instructions, it's actually housing a synthetic brain.
Precisely. And that changes every single design decision down the line, from the laptop chassis all the way down to the microscopic architecture of the memory chips.
Which is exactly what we're going to get into today. So for this deep dive, our mission is to conduct a sort of cybernetic autopsy. We're going to slice open the latest tech from Asus, NVIDIA, and Samsung to see how they're actually building this host.
And it's a fascinating roadmap. We'll go from the brain of the machine to the eyes, down to the hands, and finally into the bloodstream, which is the memory and the encryption layer.
But let's start with something you can actually put on your desk, the laptop. Specifically, what the report calls the local fortress.
Yeah, this section really highlights the massive frustration users have had over the last few
Oh,
years.
don't I know it?
Yeah.
Let's take a trip back to the dark ages of, say, 2023 or 2024. If you were a gamer on a budget and you bought one of those entry-level gaming laptops, you know, the ones with the 50 class cards like the RTX 3050 or 4050,
Yeah.
you know the pain.
The VRAM trap. It was brutal.
It was miserable. You'd have a decent processing chip, but it was just completely strangled by having only 4 gigabytes of video RAM.
Right.
You try to load any modern open world game, and the textures would just they'd constantly pop in and out. It was a stuttering
It
mess.
was obsolescence by design, honestly. See, modern games and high-res textures devour 6 to 8 gigabytes of memory effortlessly.
Easy.
So when that tiny 4 gigabyte buffer filled up, the system had to constantly swap data back and forth to the regular system RAM, which is much, much slower. That bottleneck is exactly why you got that awful hitching and freezing.
It felt like trying to drink a thick milkshake through a coffee stirrer.
That is a perfect analogy. And the Tekken Report highlights the 2026 Lenovo LOQ units because they finally broke that straw. The new NVIDIA GeForce RTX 5050 architecture doesn't just bump up the core speed, it sets 8 gigabytes of high-speed VRAM as the absolute baseline floor.
So practically speaking, for you at home, the stutter's just gone.
For 1080p and 1440p gaming, yes, entirely. It's the tactical difference between watching a slideshow and having a fluid experience. You don't have to crank your texture settings down to low anymore just to get the game to launch.
Okay, that's fantastic for gamers. But we are talking about AI hosts here, not just gaming rigs. The report flags a specific number for this laptop that I honestly thought was a typo when I first read it, 440 TOPS.
I know, it really does look like a typo compared to what we're used to seeing.
Right, because for context, a pretty decent laptop back in 2024 hit maybe 40 or 50 TOPS. So we're talking about roughly a 10 times jump in just 2 years.
Roughly, yeah. But we need to define what that actually means for the hardware. TOPS stands for trillions of operations per second.
Okay.
It is effectively the raw horsepower of the AI engine.
But where's all that speed coming from? Is this CPU just put on steroids?
No, and that's the crucial nuance here. If you try to run AI math on a standard CPU, it's incredibly slow and inefficient. These new 50-class chips are packed with dedicated tensor cores.
Tensor cores.
Yeah, think of them as specialized calculators that literally only do one thing, matrix multiplication. And that specific math is exactly what powers deep learning.
Okay, so we have a super fast calculator built specifically for AI. But why does the number 440 matter so much? Is there some magical threshold we just crossed?
There is, actually. 440 TOPS is widely considered the autonomy threshold for running quantized large language models completely locally.
Okay, wait. Break that down for the non-engineers listening to us right now.
Sure. So imagine you have a massive AI model like GPT-4. It's huge, it's cumbersome, and it requires a giant server farm somewhere in a desert to run. Quantization is basically a clever compression technique. It mathematically shrinks the model down to a fraction of its size without losing much of its actual intelligence.
I see.
So with 440 TOPS, you have enough local power to run a highly compressed version of a GPT-5 level model or even a studio grade image generator right on your laptop.
Without needing an internet connection.
Completely offline. You could be in a cabin in the woods and it works perfectly.
Okay, but let me play devil's advocate for a second. Why do I care? If I have 5G basically everywhere I go, why do I need the brain to be physically in my backpack? Why not just rely on the cloud like we always have?
Two very big reasons, latency and sovereignty.
Okay, latency first.
If you're using the cloud, there is always going to be a delay. Round-trip data takes time. But with 440 TOPS locally, the AI feels less like a clunky chatbot and more like an instantaneous extension of your own thought process. It's immediate.
And the sovereignty part, that's about privacy.
Exactly. And that's arguably the more important part. If you're a developer working on proprietary code, or say you're a lawyer handling highly sensitive NDA contracts.
Yeah, you absolutely do not want to just paste that into a random web browser.
You can't. It's a massive security risk. But with this new local hardware, you can have what the report calls a synthetic workforce, a coding assistant, a legal analyst, a creative partner, all living entirely inside your machine. Not a single byte of data ever leaves the chassis.
So you're not just buying a gaming rig anymore. You're essentially buying a private, localized data center.
Which is exactly why the report calls this a genetic leap in hardware. It's the difference between renting intelligence from a massive corporation and actually owning it yourself.
Owning the intelligence. I really like that distinction.
Yeah.
Okay, so we have the brain of the host sorted out. Let's talk about the perception layer, the monitor. Because historically, buying a monitor has been a deeply frustrating choice for a lot of users.
Oh, the classic binary dilemma.
It really was. You either bought a beautiful 4K monitor because you wanted things to look stunning. You know, you wanted to see the individual pores on a character's face in a massive RPG. But then you were stuck at, what, 60 or maybe 120 hertz if you were lucky.
Right. And if you were an esports player, you didn't care about pores at all. You just wanted pure speed.
Yeah.
So you bought a slightly grainy 1080p monitor that ran at 360 hertz just so you could actually hit a moving target.
And usually the only real solution for someone who wanted both was just, well, buy two different monitors.
Yeah.
Which is wildly expensive and completely clutters up your desk.
Exactly.
But Asus is claiming they've actually solved this with the ROG XG27 UCG Gen 2. They call it dual mode. Now, I have to stop you here because we've heard marketing jargon like dual mode before. And usually it just means some cheap software upscaling that makes everything look blurry. Is this actually different?
It is fundamentally different, and that's exactly why it made it into the Tekken Report. This isn't just software trickery or an artificial filter. It is a physical, hardware-level reconfiguration of the panel itself.
Wait, how does that work physically? A pixel is just a pixel, right? It's a tiny physical square.
In a standard display, yes, a pixel is a fixed physical unit.
Hmm.
But this monitor uses an ingenious technique borrowed from high-end camera sensors. It's called pixel binning.
Binning, like putting things into bins.
Sort of, yeah. So in mode one, which we can call cinema mode, every single pixel on the screen acts independently. You get native 4K resolution at 160 hertz. It's crisp, it's color accurate, it's perfect for creative work or immersive gaming.
Right.
But when you physically toggle the switch to sport mode, the monitor's timing controller, the T-Con, electrically groups those physical pixels into blocks of four.
So four physical pixels combine to essentially act as one giant pixel.
Exactly. So your resolution naturally drops down to 1080p. But because the data stream the monitor has to process is now so much lighter, I mean, you're pushing a quarter of the pixels you were a second ago, the refresh rate just absolutely explodes. It jumps all the way up to 480 hertz.
480 hertz. I'm going to be honest with you. Can the human eye even physically see 480 frames per second?
That's actually the wrong question to ask. It's not really about whether you can consciously perceive every single individual frame. It's about motion clarity. At 480 hertz, motion blur effectively ceases to exist.
Oh, wow. So when I whip the mouse around really fast in a competitive shooter, the background doesn't just turn into a muddy smear.
It stays perfectly razor sharp, and that means your brain can process the enemy's position fractions of a second faster. You are reacting to visual data that is much closer to analog real-world time than we've ever seen on a screen. It's a literal hardware advantage that translates directly to your win rate.
So it's a shapeshifter. It's a professional creative studio display by day, and then a lethal esports weapon by night.
Exactly. And the strategic radar section of the report predicts that this two-in-one capability will become the mandatory gold standard for displays within 18 months.
That fast?
Oh, yeah. If you're a manufacturer making a flagship monitor in late 2026 and it can't shapeshift like this, your product is already obsolete.
It's wild how fast the standard moves in this industry. Okay, so we've got the brain, we've got the eyes. I want to move down to the hands now, the interface. Because we can have all this incredible processing power, but at the end of the day, we still have to physically type on the thing.
Right, the acoustic and tactile revolution.
Yeah, you know, for years, having a really good keyboard was this incredibly weird, gate-kept hobby. If you wanted a keyboard that didn't sound like a rattly hollow plastic toy, you had to go buy a soldering iron.
Yeah.
You had to buy specialized lube, which is a whole other weird conversation, and basically spend your entire weekend assembling it yourself.
It was a very deep, very expensive niche. But niche innovations have a funny way of bleeding into the mainstream over time. And that's exactly what we're seeing with the Asus ROG Strix Morph 96.
The Morph 96, it sounds aggressive.
It does. It's a 96% layout, which is a really interesting choice. It keeps the number pad, which productivity users and data entry people absolutely refuse to give up, but it squeezes the margins tight, so it's barely wider than a standard Tenkeyless board.
Right, which leaves a lot more room on your desk for mouse movement.
Exactly. But the report really focuses on the internals of this board, specifically the sound signature.
The FOC.
The FOC.
I just love that we have an accepted technical term for a sound now.
It's incredibly descriptive. It's that deep, resonant, solid sound that keyboard enthusiasts spend hundreds of dollars chasing. Usually, you only get that by manually stuffing a keyboard case with a custom cut foam and pouring silicone into it.
But Asus has just started mass producing this experience.
Yes. The Morph 96 comes completely loaded with pure Eron foam and silicone dampening gaskets already installed at the factory. The switches are pre-lubricated. But the specific detail that really proves they are paying attention to the enthusiast community is the inclusion of south-facing LEDs.
Okay, this is one of those highly technical things where I really need you to explain it to me like I'm 5 years old. Why does it possibly matter which direction the little light bulb under the key points?
It sounds totally trivial, I know. But think of the mechanical switch like a tiny little house. In the past, the LED, let's call it the porch light, was always placed on the north side, the top edge of the switch.
Okay, makes sense.
The problem arises when you want to use high-end custom keycaps, specifically the really popular cherry profile ones. Those keycaps are low profile, and they have a very thick, sharply slanted inner roof.
Oh, I see where this is going.
Right. So when you press the key all the way down, the thick inside wall of the keycap would actually physically collide with the LED bulb sitting on the north side.
So it would just crunch.
It would create this nasty plastic-on-plastic scratching sound and a really mushy feel. It's subtle, but to an enthusiast, it is absolute torture to type on. By simply rotating the switch and moving the LED to the south side, Asus entirely cleared that airspace.
Meaning you can swap in any expensive high-end custom keycaps you want without any physical interference.
Exactly. It's a massive olive branch. It's the first time a mainstream gaming brand has fully embraced the custom enthusiast ethos right out of the box.
Yeah.
It really signals the definitive end of the hollow plastic era.
Well, I am fully on board with the end of hollow plastic keyboards. But now I want to pivot pretty hard.
Let's do it.
We've looked at the stuff we can see, the stuff we can touch, but the Tekken report makes it very clear that the real war in 2026 is being fought down in the substrate. The invisible stuff buried deep inside the case.
The literal veins of the industry. Memory.
And apparently we are facing a pretty severe crisis here.
We are. It's known as the Von Neumann bottleneck. And it is arguably the single biggest engineering problem in AI hardware right now. You see, the actual processors, those new GPUs we talked about earlier, are incredibly, incredibly fast. They are like Formula One Ferraris.
Right.
But the memory architecture that actually feeds data into those processors, it's basically a single-lane dirt road.
So the Ferrari is just sitting there stuck in traffic.
Exactly. Ideally, it wants to go 200 miles an hour, but mostly it's just idling, waiting for the next packet of data to arrive. the processor is literally starving for information. And this is exactly where Samsung has stepped in to shatter that barrier. The report just confirmed the mass production of HBM4.
High bandwidth memory 4.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we hear about HBM every year, it feels like.
Right.
What makes version 4 so special?
It's the packaging architecture. This is highly advanced 3D stacking technology. They are literally stacking memory chips vertically on top of each other like a skyscraper, and then packaging that entire structure directly onto the GPU die itself.
Wow.
But the massive breakthrough is the interface width. They've successfully surpassed the 2048-bit interface threshold.
2048-bit, I mean, that sounds extremely wide.
To give you a real-world comparison, standard RAM in your everyday PC right now might have a 64-bit or maybe a 128-bit data path. This HBM4 is a 2048-lane superhighway.
Okay, that's just a staggering difference in bandwidth.
It is. And on top of that, they've integrated the logic die directly into the bottom of the memory stack, which essentially means the memory itself can do some basic processing to manage its own traffic flow, drastically reducing latency.
So why does this matter to the average person listening right now? Or is this purely a supercomputer thing?
Oh, it matters to everyone because of the geopolitics of AI. Think about the next generation of massive models, GPT-5, Claude 4, whatever synthetic agent is going to be running your phone in 2027.
Right.
Those models are trained on ultra-high-end architectures, like NVIDIA's new Rubin platform, and those architectures physically cannot function at full speed without HBM4.
So if you can't get your hands on the HBM4 memory, you simply can't build the brain.
Correct. Samsung has effectively seized control of the lifeblood of the entire synthetic workforce. The report puts it incredibly bluntly. In 2026, the company that controls the memory controls the speed of evolution. If you are a nation state or a massive tech giant and you cannot secure a steady supply of HBM4, you are completely out of the race.
That is heavy. It's not just a spec sheet anymore. It's a literal leverage point for global power.
But speaking of global power and honestly slightly scary concepts, let's talk about security.
Yes.
Because if we are moving toward this world where I have an autonomous agent living on my laptop, doing my taxes, drafting my emails, reading my contracts, I have a major concern.
Data sovereignty.
Right. Even if I run things locally, at some point, data has to be processed. And my understanding is that to process any encrypted data, the computer has to temporarily unlock it. It has to decrypt it.
And that tiny window is the moment of ultimate vulnerability. It's a technique called RAM scraping. When you open a secure file for the AI to read it, it's exposed in the system memory.
So if a hacker or a rogue state actor has quietly compromised your OS, they don't need to break your encryption. They just read the raw data right out of the RAM while you're using it.
Exactly. It's a massive blind spot.
So how do we possibly fix that? Because the report mentions something called the Niobium Project from Samsung, and honestly, reading it, it sounds like pure science fiction. It absolutely sounds like sci-fi, but it's very real math. It's the holy grail of cryptography. It's called FHE, fully homomorphic encryption.
Fully homomorphic encryption. That is a mouthful. Unpack that for us.
Okay, let's use an analogy. Imagine a heavily locked safe. Inside that safe is a highly sensitive document, maybe your personal medical records or your company's bank details.
Okay.
In the old world of computing, if you wanted an AI to analyze that document, you had to unlock the safe, take the piece of paper out, and read it in the open air.
Which is exactly the moment the thief snaps a photo of it.
Precisely. FHE is a mathematical framework that allows the computer to reach its hands into the safe without ever unlocking the door, perform complex analysis on the document inside, and give you a result.
Wait, really? How can an AI possibly do math on a document it literally can't see?
It uses incredibly complex algebraic structures. The AI receives what looks like completely garbled, encrypted noise. It blindly runs its algorithms on that noise. It then spits out a result that is also just garbled, encrypted noise.
But
then, when you, the user who holds the one and only decryption key, decrypt that noisy result, it magically translates into the perfectly correct answer.
That sounds like actual magic.
I know, it's just math, but it genuinely feels like magic.
So if this is so secure, why haven't we been doing this forever?
Because the computational weight is astronomical. Until very recently, running even a simple task using FHE would take a standard processor literally months of continuous computing time. It was theoretically brilliant, but practically entirely useless.
And the Niobium project changes that math.
It changes everything. Niobium, along with their SEMI5 architecture, is a dedicated hardware chip designed entirely for this specific type of algebra. It reduces that processing time from months down to seconds.
Seconds. Okay, that makes it actually usable in real time.
Imagine a hospital using a cloud AI to look for early cancer patterns in patient scans. With FHE, they can send the entire hospital's database to the cloud, have the AI analyze every pixel, and get the diagnostic results back without the cloud provider or the AI company ever actually seeing a single patient's name, face, or medical history.
It marks the definitive end of the server-side data leak era. Even if a hacker successfully breaks into the massive server farm, all they're going to find is exabytes of unsolvable mathematical noise.
It's the ultimate shield for the AI age. And frankly, considering how deeply integrated this tech is getting, it's the only way we can actually trust these systems with our lives.
That is surprisingly reassuring, actually, because when you combine all these massive leaps together, the 440 TOPS local laptop, the incredible bandwidth of HBM4 memory, the absolute security of FHE, it really feels like we aren't just building faster tools, we are building a completely new kind of organism.
And that's the perfect transition to the final section of the Tekken Report, the philosophy of 2026.
The AI-first paradigm.
Yeah. If we take a step back and connect all these dots, NVIDIA's chips, Samsung's memory, the new strategic outlook from CES, we are witnessing a fundamental shift from instructional computing to goal-oriented computing.
I really love that distinction. Instructional computing is basically what we've done since the invention of the mouse, right? I click file, I click save, I drag this window over here. I am the human puppet master giving the machine constant micro-instructions.
You are the operator. You are doing all the manual labor. Goal-oriented computing completely flips that script. You no longer tell the computer how to do its job. You just tell it what you want the final outcome to be.
Give me an example.
You sit down and say, plan a comprehensive marketing campaign for next week based on these three PDF reports and draft all the outbound emails.
And the hardware, these localized, highly secure agents we just discussed, they just figure out the intermediate steps.
They plan, they iterate, they open the necessary applications themselves, and they execute the tasks. And over time, they learn from your specific corrections and preferences.
Okay, that sounds incredibly convenient, but I have to play devil's advocate here again. If the computer is doing the clicking and the planning and the executing, do I even still need an operating system? Do I need a desktop with little folders and a start menu?
That is exactly what the report calls the Tekken verdict. They are predicting the slow, inevitable death of the operating system as we currently understand it.
Wow.
Think about it. If you have a persistent, personalized AI agent that knows your entire workflow, perfectly protects your data with FHE, and autonomously executes your goals, why on earth do you need folders? The user interface stops being a static dashboard and becomes an ongoing conversation.
That is honestly slightly terrifying. It feels like we are losing a layer of control.
Or, depending on how you look at it, it's the ultimate liberation from digital drudgery, but it absolutely changes the very definition of the word computer. The hardware is no longer a tool that you actively wield. It is simply the physical infrastructure for a synthetic brain.
The hardware becomes just a vessel, a host.
Exactly. The clear winners in this new market aren't the companies making prettier desktop icons or smoother window animations. They are the ones aggressively investing in core architecture, the AI infrastructure, the massive memory bandwidth, and the crypto security.
It really is a brave new world.
Yeah.
I mean, we've gone from worrying about VRAM limitations and stuttering video games to literally debating the nature of autonomy and agency in silicon.
It's moving unimaginably fast. And the hardware that we are buying today, this specific laptop, this specific dual mode monitor, is effectively the launch pad for this entire new reality.
So wrapping up here, there's a question I want to leave you with today. And it's a bit of a provocative one based on everything we've just covered.
Mm-hmm.
If this new hardware is specifically designed to host synthetic agents that act entirely on their own, that make their own sub decisions, that secure their own data, are we still actually the users of our computers?
Or are we just the people paying the electric bill for the real decision makers?
Definitely something to think about the next time you hear your cooling fans spin up. Keep your sensors locked on the Silicon Frontlines, everyone. We'll catch you in the next deep dive.